Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome once again to Swinging from the Hips, your place for your cricketing fix. And we're up to episode number 14, going along nicely there. And tonight on Swinging from the Hips, we'll be looking at the second test between England and the West Indies. We'll also look at the preview sort of the third test coming up. There's not a lot of information out about it at the moment, but we'll have a look at it. And we'll have a look gander at the 3TC. But before we get into that, let's welcome the lads. We've got Taran back with us today. How are we all doing today?
We're good.
Oh, good. It is good, fellas.
Yeah, we're speaking once, weren't we?
Good to have you back again, Taran. And we'll be good to see you popping in and out when you can.
No, absolutely. No, good to be back. Good to come back on and talk cricket for an hour.
No, that's cool. Awesome. All right, well, we'll head right into it with Rohit with This Week in Cricket. And Rohit, This Week in Cricket.
Hello, everybody. So just a couple of birthdays of note for This Week in Cricket. July 18th, 1949, D.K. Lilly, Dennis Keith Lilly, celebrating his birthday. And July 23rd, 1953, one of England's finer batsmen, Graham Gooch. So those are the couple of birthdays that we've sort of mustered up this week. And just a few other things in the history side. July 18th, back in 2019, Zimbabwe became the first full member country to be suspended due to government interference. I don't know too much more about that at the moment, but one of the colleagues might bring that and know a bit more about it than me. And what else we got? Only 10 men have scored 100 and taken a hat-trick in the same match. Mike Proctor has done it twice and did it for the something time on the 18th of July. we're missing something in there, aren't we? And July 19th, 93, the last. This was the beefy Ian Botham's last first-class cricket match. And it was against the old foe, the Australians, for the Poms. And it wasn't a successful outing for Beefy, but just like every other player wanting to be the wicketkeeper, having to be the keeper for the last over of the match, and he did it without any keeping gear on. So that's how he finished his career. July 20th. Now, after in 81, actually. Now, this is interesting because the English slipped out to 500-1 odds to beat Australia in Headingley in the Ashes test. And this is where Beefy came to the fore, scoring 145 from 149 balls to put England back in the picture after following on. Then Bob Willis stole the day and took 8 for 43. And there was a couple of punts put on in that game by the Australians taking that 500-1 odds, thinking that they'd win that game, and they ended up being the losers. Now, July 20th, 2017, this is an interesting one. I don't know if any one of us would have been able to manage this, but Harmanpreet, how do you pronounce that? Kaur, with a dislocated finger, back pain, and a hamstring strain, scored 171 runs off 115 balls. And this was in a World Cup semi-final against Australia. And she led her team to victory Her first 50 was off 64 balls, second 50 off 26, and that third 50 off 17 balls. So the pain must have been getting more aggravating, so she just wanted to go and smash it. Now, July 22nd, couple left here. Now, one of the great off-spinners there, Muralitharan, and on 22nd July 2010, with his final ball in Test cricket, he took his 800th wicket. And bearing in mind, he started that test on 792 Test wickets. So that was a really great outcome for him in his final test. That's a lot of burping going on in the background. can hear it in my ears. Now, lastly, July 23rd, here's some dirt. Mark Atherton picking up some dirt and putting it in his pocket, nearly losing his job over this, to help the bowlers get reverse swing by applying it on the ball.
Now, hey, that wasn't might be allowed now.
Hey?
They're might probably be allowed that these days. No, yeah. It might be allowed now.
It might be, wouldn't it?
There's no contamination there.
No, and the thing was, I mean, it was not illegal to put the dirt in his pocket. It was just the mere fact of rubbing it on the ball. So there we have it, this week in history.
Nah, thank you for that. And yeah, that's rather interesting. I'll just go back to this. It's like I'm getting old and I couldn't imagine playing with a dislocated finger, back pain and a hamstring injury to score 170-odd.
But she got faster and faster.
She got faster and faster.
When you you're getting old. When you said you started, with I'm getting old, I thought you were going to justify your burping in the background.
Me too.
Nobody, don't throw it on me, man. Nobody knows who did it. Thanks, Rohit, for that. This week in history, and we'll move on quickly onto the news this week. And in the news this week, the West Indies managed to do old-fashioned Calypso to hand England the second test at Old Trafford, and we'll get into that straight after the news this week. We will look into that a bit more in depth. New Zealand cricket followed up at South Island Winter Camp with a North Island Winter Camp held at Mount Maunganui. Both men's and women's teams were in the camp, just as they had at Lincoln, and they had the North Island players going to the North Island one, South Island players going to the South Island one. Got to keep them segregated. And an interesting one, 9 Bangladesh players have resumed training with a catch. But that's why it's interesting. They can only train one at a time with their trainer slash coach. So that's two individuals having to use separate facilities. So even those two people can't use the same facilities, and they have to maintain distancing while they're practicing. AB de Villiers Eagles took home the gold medal in the Solidarity Cup, in the first ever 3TC match between the Eagles, the Kingfishers, and the Kites. And we'll go into more detail about how the 3TC match operates and what 3TC is after the review of the second test and the preview of the third. ICC met this week and finally made a decision we all knew they were going to make anyway over a month ago. That is, they have postponed the T20 World Cup in Australia. The Women's ODI World Cup in New Zealand is still on the cards for February 2021. And that's sort of like, just in case we run out of time to talk about that further. Just at the moment, no decision's been made apart from the fact that the 2020 T20 World Cup has been postponed to 2021 and the 2021 version to 2022. Now, Australia was going to host it this year, India next year. They haven't decided what order they're going to host it in. And as I said, we'll go into that more in detail if we get a chance towards the end of the show. There's some good news for Pakistan with their tour of England, with Mohammad Amir now available for the tour. He had withdrawn from the tour for the birth of their second child, but it looks like he's gotten a pass and he will be joining the Pakistani tour team after he's finished his quarantining. Now, he'll be replacing Harris Ralph, who has tested positive for COVID-19 twice. Now, I don't know whether he recovered and got COVID again or whether he had COVID once and he just failed the test multiple times. Now, we're all familiar with failing tests, aren't we, guys? So we go back to our school days. So that was the week in news.
I was wondering what you're meaning.
We never failed anything, did we?
No.
Right.
See, student.
Straight C student, Mr. Average. No. All righty. Well, as we mentioned in the news, this week, England and West Indies went to Old Trafford to play the second test, Old Trafford and Manchester. And unfortunately for the West Indies, they couldn't follow up their great form in the first. And really sort of England sort of, especially with a day washed out, cruising to a victory. What was your initial thoughts, guys, on that test match?
Yeah, I'll start there. So, look, I actually just caught up with the result at the end, and I was actually quite shocked because I did know that it had a rained out day in there or two. So the weather did intervene, and I was like, really? How the heck did the Windies lose that match? So yep. Once I actually opened it up and had a look at the scoreboard and a bit of commentary there, and I was like, wow, it's the old Calypso, that's for sure, and the Ben Stokes show, wasn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's like, it was a good start by the West Indies. They actually did have England. I mean, like, they weren't teetering or anything, but they were making progress at 81 for 3. And then there was that 260-run partnership, probably a signature of this test, between Sibley and Stokes that put an end to that and basically put England on the front foot from that point on.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, Super Stokes, he's going to probably end up being one of their greatest all-rounders in time, in my view. Just amazing what that man can do. He even opened the second innings, didn't he?
He opened the second innings as well, and we'll get onto that in a sec. And I'll just bring up the scoreboard and we can just get that going in a sec. There we go, and there's the scoreboard there. So Ben Stokes in that first innings, 176. It's not a bad strike rate there for a first innings, especially when England were in trouble there for a short period. And Dom Sibley, 120, opening the batting for England.
Yeah. That's quite a good partnership, obviously. You know, it goes without saying. But it also goes to show that, innings aside, West Indies weren't too bad. Yeah, granted, you probably don't want to let Dom Best get 31 at the back end of an innings.
Yep.
But other than Dom Best and Butler's 40 and those two big scores, there's nothing off note. I mean, even Josh Butler's 40 is just standard keeper's innings.
Yep.
But you'd think a 30 from Best, and you know, that kind of just, it gets a bit niggly towards the back end after you've done a bit of time in the dirt. But other than those two, yeah, West Indies weren't actually as poor as the scoreline might suggest in the first innings.
You're right there. I mean, like, when you look at the scorecards, you're taking Sibley's and Stokes' scores out of their picture, and then Stokes in the second innings again. They're very similar scorecards to the two West Indies innings.
And that's what I suppose, coaches ask you to do, or selectors ask people to do, is they go on to get big scores. And that's exactly what these two have done. You know, you kind of get a start and you kick on and make it a 10 and 100 or a big 100 to give you be that difference between the two sides. And that's exactly what it turned out to be. So, yeah, no shame in it. But, again, not surprising.
That's the note that I've got. Again, I mean, like, it's something that's a trend from the first test for the West Indies as well, is that they really need someone in their side. Because, look, when you look at that first innings, you had Braithwaite with 75, Brooks with 68, Chase with 51. We'll look at the scorecard in a sec. But, I mean, they need somebody to actually go on and to make a big 100, don't they? To put the West Indies on a front foot in a dominating position.
They had three.
What were they on? They were on 80 for 110 or so at the end of lunch, at the start of lunch, when they went into lunch for two, having lost the opener the night before and then losing Alzari Joseph, the night watchman.
Yep.
They're in a strong position.
And
then they got to 220 odd for four. Or 250 for five, whatever they might be.
They were 199 for four, which is, again, not a bad position.
Yeah, and I mean, then they lost their fifth one at 242. So, you know, they were 242 for four at one point.
Yeah.
And so, again, they got starts And that's the difference, bro. You got blokes, yeah, well, 75, you can live with that. But the big culprits you're probably going to point the fingers at is Hope, who's had a very quiet series,
yep.
Brooke, and Chase. Those three, having got done the hard work to throw it away, there's probably a difference of 100 runs at least.
Yep, absolutely.
And, Blackwood, you know, anyone can miss out. Blackwood's and Dowridge's, but then, and it's been documented that Holder's battling with the bat. He's batting 7 and 8. The dude's got a couple of test hundreds. He's got a double hundred.
Yep.
He probably needs to be fronting up a bit more as a skipper with the bat.
And he'll be disappointed because we know, as we've talked about previously, last week again, this West Indies team isn't really a team that's got like real, for want of a term, a Ben Stokes star. They're very much a team where everybody pitches in and does a role, pulls the team out of a hole when they need to and the like. So I think Holder will be disappointed as he sees himself as being that leader that sort of brings that out of the rest of the team by his performances.
Yeah, I think the disappointing fact for them would be Campbell at the top.
Top, yep.
He's missed out on four occasions now. I really like the look of him. Like he looks decent.
Yep.
He looks like somebody you'd think, oh, he'll probably should score a few more runs than he has so far. But it is England. But yeah, so he's been found out a little bit, which has allowed them to kind of open up an end early. And Sheho, Red Bull stats haven't been flash anyway, which means he's exposed against a newer rock. That just opens up everyone all the way down.
Well, it's just cascading effect.
Yeah, then you get to Chase, and he's got quite a good record. But then come next week, Archer might return, and Chase's short ball shortcomings have been well documented, so they're probably going to pepper him as well.
Yep. Sorry, I just cleared my throat. Just going back to the England's first innings and just looking at the bowling for the West Indies. So it's great to have you on the show because I can ask you this question. You got Sir Roston Chase, who's picked up a fifer, but it's cost him 172 and he's gone at quite an expensive economy rate as well. How do you feel? Do you still feel elated that you picked up a fifer? Or would you sort of think, oh, great, I picked up five wickets, but it's not exactly a performance to write home about?
I think you'd be stoked, wouldn't you?
I don't know. Getting five wickets, mate.
You got a fifer. Your name goes on the honors board. Yeah.
Yep.
But he's got seven wickets in this competition. You know, he's picked up crucial wickets in the test gone by, where he got a twofer in the first test. Now he's got a fifer. He's got a bowling average off 34, which is healthy for a off-spinner.
Yep.
And then his strike rate is 59. I think Shane Warne, I'm making a comparative here, but it's by no means a comparative. Shane Warne's career strike rate was 60. So what I'm trying to say is,
yep.
It's not as if he's had to bowl endless amounts of overs or go for plenty of runs. You know, he did a job.
Sure. Mm. Yep. And I suppose another area that the West Indies will want to look at is their drop catches. Dom simply dropped twice before 50 and Stokes before 50 as well. That sort of came back to really hurt them, didn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Mm. Well,
the old adage.
Yeah, I remember for the first time, it was the 92 World Cup when it first came into my life. You know, you hear the commentators go, oh, catches win matches, catches win mm-hmm. matches. When they had the classic catch competition in the 92 World Cup and they used to show old catches. And that whole adage that catches win matches, well, if you don't win matches, it definitely costs you matches.
Yep.
You know, it's never definitely cost you a match, but it will cost you games.
Yep, wow. Absolutely.
Yeah, Stokes went and scored 170 odd after that. You know, that's definitely put you on the back foot then when you put a player down when they're under 50.
I mean, it's hard. The second innings was you're in a hiding to nothing. When you go down against two guys that are well-known, a couple of guys are well-known white ball players around the world, feared white ball players, and then they get a chance to face a hard new ball with the zero consequence.
Mm-hmm.
you know, for Stokes to play the way he did, it's not a surprise. And once batters start getting into that zone, it becomes very hard to do. Contain them. You almost have to attack them.
Attack them, Yeah.
So yeah, that's no surprise. But I was stoked to see Kemar Roach get a couple of poles after all his hard yards over there, four innings.
This is like he basically picked up 250. But you look at Kemar Roach, and really, I mean, in the match, you'd say he's the one that was putting the most amount of pressure on. They were paying him a lot of respect. They weren't actually taking a lot of runs off him.
Yeah, look, I followed the test match closely for both tests.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone and put just over two runs and over. His RPO has been two, which is pretty good considering he's carrying that team. It shows that he's not just bowled negatively. He's actually looked to get the ball to swing. He's tried to make things happen, create chances, and he's also managed to keep a lid on things. He's bought 80 overs so far.
That's a big workload.
80 overs. The top four bowlers, you've got Jason Holder has bowled 78 overs.
Yep.
Shannon Gabriel is one shy of 70 overs, so he's 69.5. Roach has bowled 80. So the three quicks have bowled 80. In comparison, the next highest bowling overs from an Englishman is... it's a seamer, is Stokes at 52.
It's a serious workload. And that's where sort of like, I've forgotten the assistant coach's name actually, sorry. But he basically was making a comment during the week. He actually feels that they're still doing fine. They were back into the nets for their first net session after the end of the second test. Bowling again, and the only thing they've been doing is putting their feet up outside of the nets. But he doesn't seem to be too concerned about the workload that his bowling quartet have been going through.
Yeah. These guys, it's only one test, and God knows when the next set of cricket games are going to come from, right? And they're under this climate, so they're probably banking on going for broke.
That's it. Just run your body to the end, because as you say, you're going to have plenty of time to recover.
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity to kind of put England down in England, which they haven't done since, I think, sometime in the late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, we had that last week, but unfortunately lost that statistic that we brought up the last time they actually won a test series in the UK or in England.
They won a lot of single games. They tended to go on to a 2-1 loss on most occasions. Have you had a look at the second innings? We need to have a look at the second innings.
We're looking at bringing the second innings up right now. So basically, England go into the second innings. They're looking for quick runs. So they actually opened up with Stokes and Butler. Now, it didn't quite work out for Butler. He went cheaply. But Stokes following up on his first innings heroics with a 78 or 57 balls. Really sort of setting things up nicely for England.
Yeah. Yeah, just gave them that... opportunity with the second new ball, didn't he?
Oh, that's
allowed them, you know, go early, so second by and the second new ball, so they can dip into the second new ball. So yeah,
it's just like it's interesting coming back to that the second inning scorecard for England is like the comment that you made earlier. You take certain people's scores out again with Ben Stokes, and you look at the rest of the runs there. Obviously, Root. Made some quick runs before being run out, but nobody else is making the big score or making those runs. It's a couple of one player for England or two players for England that made the runs in the test match. The rest of them pretty much on par as the West Indians.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the cream rising to the top in the way, isn't it?
So, they came in, they... batted for about an hour on that last day. We had one day washed out, and that would have given the West Indies a bit of hope in terms of drawing the test match, I would have thought. But it seems that wasn't good enough, and the fact that 2.5 sessions was enough to bowl the Windies out.
Mm. Yeah, look, I don't think professional cricketers look at it that way. They're pretty finicky. They kind of fear these breakdowns and just stoppages in play and everything. They're kind of used to routine and they understand how the game runs like clockwork, right? But as soon as these little things start getting thrown into the game, it does throw a bit of a spanner in the works, and which means you have to be all that more ready and on the money. Like, people think, oh, cool, a day's washed out, but that pitch has also sat under the covers for a day.
Yep.
So there's probably likely to be a bit more life than usual compared to a sunny day. A day's washed out, that means it's had 8 less hours of traffic or 6 hours less of foot traffic on it, which means it's probably not as dry. It's not as, you know, it's not cracking up and whatever else. So the way it plays changes.
Yeah, no, that's good. And that's why it's great to have you back on the show with that sort of insight into it.
Absolutely.
When you look at it, sitting on the couch, you sort of think you'd be going, yeah, we've got to save the test match, and I've taken a day off, taken a day out of that equation. So, but as you're right, so basically it's not an easy thing to mentally switch on and mentally switch back on, off and on and off. You want to get into a rhythm, and you like the flow of a full day's play. Wind downs at the end, warm ups in the morning, going through to a full day's play again, and you like that sort of continuity.
I think the big thing with this test match, and myself included, we're like, West Indies aren't used to going one up overseas, right? They're not used to going up one up.
Yep.
And punters like myself included were like, oh, okay, well, they're going to blow that lead because they probably got there by luck. Or they got lucky there, kind of attitude with Joe Root going away with his baby and all of that. They got lucky there. That's the attitude we have as punters.
Yep.
I reckon these smaller nations probably feel that inherently, like subconsciously, probably don't feel that they deserve to go out two up, or they'll start worrying, oh dear, we've used up our luck.
Yep.
You know, reality is going to hit around the corner.
Wound up that rubber band.
And then on the flip side, you've probably got the Englishman going, oh, we've all seen these guys fall over before. We've seen these guys fall over before, boys. All we need is 60-odd overs. Think a new ball will do the trick. Hang in there. So, you know, it's the other side of the body language as well. They're genuinely believing in it. These guys are second-guessing themselves, and that's enough to create a bit of momentum. And then things start going downhill pretty quickly.
It's the mental side of the game, though, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
So speaking of the mental side of the game, I mean, like, just to Aaron with this comment there, so like negative mode of trying to play out a day instead of playing normally.
Yeah.
What I mean, like, you go back, you know, we're talking old style cricket versus new style cricket. Old days, they shut up shop, you know, the term shut up shop, and you basically just block and block until you've seen the whole day out. I remember for New Zealand, the great one is Mark Greatbatch and Martin Sneddon at the Wacker, where they basically, the two of them, batted out a day when New Zealand were in trouble. That doesn't seem to be in the mentality at all of a modern-day cricketer, does it? Or is it still there?
I think there are your guys like Kane Williamson and them, you know, the true greats. They have the ability, and not the ability, but they had the mental capacity to soak it up and just enjoy the moment, just enjoy defending. But we're talking about, you know, the cream of the crop and the rest of them.
Yep.
Right. So, and a lot of West Indians have a lot of flair to their style. And with that comes a few exposing risk. Some of their, technical deficiencies as well.
Yep.
So they are probably a bit easier to expose compared to maybe like a Indian side. But having said that, India has been cut open on more than a few occasions overseas as well in a session or two, because there's a lot of white ball cricket play. People have I wonder if that just, your attention span is probably no more, like not as long as it used to be.
Well, it hasn't had the training, has it? The attention, it's not had the training because you're playing that fast game all the time.
And you've gone from playing one day cricket here and there, where a boundary every few overs was good enough, to playing T20 cricket, where a boundary every few balls is good enough to play in T10 cricket, where a boundary every second ball is needed. So you're itching to hit the ball, right? You're kind of trained to hit the ball and feel the ball on bat, and you start second guessing where your stumps are. So you want to feel for the ball and try and play at balls that you don't need to play at, and then your outside edge gets exposed. Come next innings, you're wanting to leave a lot of balls because you don't want to, your outside edge to get exposed, and you're showing your stumps and getting LBN bowled, and it's not easy.
Yep. And is that leading to too much T20 cricket?
No, not at all. Not at all. That's definitely not what I'm trying to lean at. Definitely not. No, it's definitely not what I'm trying to go towards, because if you look at the West Indian side, hardly any one of them, I don't think anyone, if you go through the batting order, I don't think anybody plays T20 cricket around the world.
They're just playing the CPL.
No, I don't think so.
Surely they're playing the CPL.
I don't think they're starting stars. I've seen a wee bit of CPL. I mean, the timing doesn't align with us, but none of the names just spring to mind.
Yeah, right. Mm. I suppose just bringing it back to a bit of England as well, who just with Stuart Broad, you'd have to be happy if you're Stuart Broad. No player likes to be left out. I know they've got a rotation, but even explaining a rotation, no player likes to be left out. So for him to come in and get three wickets in the first, three wickets in the second, he'd be pretty happy with his return, wouldn't he? Especially with he took some pretty crucial wickets in that second innings as well.
Yeah, he's got that knack, eh?
Yep.
You know, he's got that ability, and he's got that confidence too. He's cut Australia up on so many occasions. He's got that belief in himself.
It's a good point you made about the fact that he's cut Australia up, because that's why Australia tries to get inside his head to basically break him down so that he doesn't have that effect. And he's targeted because they know that he's has that success against them.
He's got serious skill with the Duke ball and under English conditions, you know. So, yeah, and he's got that strong belief. I was surprised to see them leaving him out. Yeah, I think he's closing in on a milestone of some sort, 400 test wickets or something.
Let's bring that up, actually. We can do that. Hang on one moment, please, caller. Just wait for the interweb to...
401 here. I think he's got it. There it is.
He's just wickets, he's on 500. He's closing on 500 test wickets. He's 491.
491. So there you go.
He's on 491. So he's closing on... That's death, yes.
So he is the highest five wicket taker as a fast bowler, I think. Because Keppel Dave was 400 and something.
Oh, no, Glenn McGrath's over 500.
Oh, okay, yep. Sorry, my bad.
That's okay, we'll forgive you.
I said fast bowler. Not a very accurate fast bowler.
just quickly, I suppose, looking at the West Indies second innings, you got a Blackwood again, and he seems to be a second innings player after his 95 in that first test. Brooks with his 62, and Holder, sort of, he'll be happy that he finally got some runs under his belt. And but again, I suppose it was that you really wanted one of those players to get that 100. And if they'd got that, you probably would have found the other batters probably would have had some good partnerships around that player.
Yeah. Again, like I said, Campbell, I'm not sure. I really like the guy. I just like the dude, I think. I just think.
Yep.
I just wish he does well. Hope has been disappointing again. I had question marks over Brooks, but I'm pretty stoked to see that he's got some runs. You know, you kind of want to back the underdogs, and you're like, oh, I don't really know this dude, doesn't look that hot. And then you're like, oh, cool, nice, I got to see you for an extended period of time, I've enjoyed your bat. Not many people don't enjoy West Indian's batting. You know, there's a lot of flair, there's a lot of style, there's a lot of oohs and ahs, because they're either playing and missing, or trying their heart out. All playing some really, really cool shots that you wish you could play. So either way, it's fun.
I know what you mean, because one of the things that sticks in my head is actually not a player that's playing in this test match. In fact, it's a player that played a long time ago, Richie Richardson. And this is like a cover drive, and it wasn't a full 360. It was actually more like a 720. That seems, you know, you have this impression in your head of his bat going 720 degrees to around in an arc to hit his cover drive sort of thing. So I know what you mean in terms of all that flair that goes with it. The swagger as well, the flair and the swagger.
I don't know if this team has that swag. Maybe Roach and a couple of the lads, but I think there's more swag in the West Indian and the English side than there is in any of the rest of the West Indian boys. Yeah, you know.
No, the swag goes back to the 80s, doesn't it, with Viv Richards?
Yeah. And it comes, you know, success breeds success. Success breeds that success, you know. So these boys haven't won a lot. So I just – well, they have won enough, but they haven't won – as much as their predecessors. So, but yeah, Shamra Brooks. Yeah, and it was nice to see him get some runs. I don't know what they have in their squad that they could replace Campbell with as an opener.
I suppose that's a good opportunity. Oh, sorry, Rohit, you want to say something?
I was going to say Darich, the keeper. He's scored bugger all, and Shea Hope's another keeper in the team, isn't he?
Is he? Is Shea Hope a keeper? Oh, he keeps in the white ball, eh?
Yeah. Do you think there's room for him to move into the keeping position and have less pressure lower down the order? Because he can bat, can he?
Yeah, oh, he can bat. Oh, yeah, look, not a bad shout. But then I was looking at the stats to compare. And you know Darich, he hasn't looked great. But his average and Butler's average is the same in the series, 20.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, like, so he looks terrible, but...
Yep. Yeah, he ended up with two ducks in the game, bugger all, so he's probably unlucky. Yeah.
He was actually quite a critical piece of the puzzle in the first test, Darich, because although the West Indies had a good partnership, but when he came in, if Darich had gone cheaply, I think the dressing room would have got rather nervous. So I think he only got about 20, but it was quite a crucial 20 that he actually did end up getting.
I think he's a bit of a bottling in their side. I think he's a bit of a quiet leader, and he probably offers a bit more, like with surety and all that. So,
well, it's a good discussion to have, because we'll move into the preview of our third test starting on Friday.
Can I just interrupt there? Because I'm looking.
Of course, you can interrupt. Interrupt away.
The bowling in that second innings by the West Indies.
Yes,
you knew they were going out for runs, and yet looking at those figures, they just got hammered.
Yeah, I did have that down as a note. Yeah, so again, why wouldn't you come up with a plan of attack which limits the runs, whether it's bowling one side of the wicket, stacking that side, and saying you play the other side of the field at risk, or, you know, something that's very negative, but just bowling wide legs down leg side.
Those economy,
you're not
going to
get caught at the test match.
No, they're 2020 one day cricket bowling economy rates, those.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's a lot easier said than done. Momentum is an amazing thing here.
From what you're saying, that means that the senior leadership and the management actually missed the trick here, and the fact that they should have been looking at these plans and say, okay, how are we going to limit the damage here, and what tactics are we going to apply?
Oh, believe me, they would have talked about it. 100% they would have talked about it. A couple of them would have even been dreading going, oh, no, here comes Stokes. You know, and they would have come up with their own plans. But when there's no consequence on it, like when Broad's got, Stokes has got nothing to worry about, and he's got all the skill in the world, he's always going to do that. You need the things to go your way. Like, or you have to be quite gutsy and bowl a slow ball and land it. The ball would have been quite new as well.
Yep.
So, and slow balls probably weren't sticking like they needed to. So it would have been a half a decent new ball, right? And as
soon as
you start spreading the field, it becomes really, really hard to stop the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost better off just having a normal field and just
and bowling in normal bowl plans.
And so if you just put everyone to the boundary, these guys just then they'll go, I can pinch a single when I want to, then I'll hit a six when I want to.
Yep, right.
As opposed to, I'm going to keep you on dot, 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 dot. Like, you know, I've heard coaches say, oh, look, you need to attack them. You don't go into a defensive mindset. When they're attacking you, you attack them with a plan.
Yep.
You don't try and defend runs, because in four-day cricket, you can't defend runs when this is happening.
So it's lucky that we've got you on.
No, I don't have the answers to it, but I'm just
It's quite interesting.
My figures have looked like the West Indian ones many times, more times than
That's right. They look like Kemar Roaches in the first innings at times as well.
But look, I'm looking at their squad, right?
Yep.
I literally can't see a batter. They've got plenty of bowling resource. Like, they've got Raymond Reefer, an all-rounder. They've got Chima Holder, who's a bowler.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, batting options are Raymond Reefer, all-rounder. Rakeem Cornwall, who can bat, but he's predominantly
he's a bowler. Spinner. Yep.
And Shamra's playing, Shamar's playing, John Campbell's playing, Braithwaite's playing, Holder's playing, Blackwood's playing. The backup batter is Nkumra Bonner. So
really, what we're saying is that the chances of a change in the West Indies squad is quite minimal, really, with what they've got. I mean, they might look at the bowlers, but then with what the assistant coach has said, he's quite comfortable with the way that the Tet's performing and pulling up after the game, even after the workload that they've had. So we're basically looking at the West Indies squad being the same. The England squad's probably going to remain the same because they've won, but you've got the element of Jofra Archer becoming available. Do you slot Jofra Archer back in for, let's see, who's it going to be?
Look, let's finish on the West Indies, right? I've just pulled up McCormick's stats. He's played 70 first-class games, and he averages 27.
Yep.
Right? You would not, in New Zealand, you would not be playing 70 first-class, let alone 70. You wouldn't even be playing 30 if you're averaging 27. First-class games, let alone make the test side at an average of 27.
Yep.
And if you say, okay, well, maybe he's an all-rounder, he's played 69 games and he's got 45 wickets. So hardly qualifies as an all-rounder. He must have obviously had a fantastic domestic season, like the one just gone by, which would explain his selection, but I definitely wouldn't be putting him in the firing line against English in England.
I'm basically what I'm hearing is the team that's played the first and second test is the one that'll roll out for the third.
I'd pick the same batting order, and I'd put the I'd back John Campbell and say, mate, we're picked up, we're all back here. But put some back on Braithwaite, Chase, and Hope, and say, hey, you're the big boys of this team. You need to step up.
Yep, step up. Yeah, that's. I was just going to say. So you're basically picking them and saying, like, we've given you another shot. Now, make it worth it.
Yeah, and the only option I'd look at again is maybe drop Joseph and carry Rakeem Cornwall, because Chase picked up poles. Don Best has picked up poles, so Rakeem Cornwall might just give you a better control on the game.
Mm-hmm.
And just see if you can
back. Let's face it, and we all want to see Rakeem Cornwall out there as well.
For all the right reasons, yeah.
For all the right reasons, absolutely. Well, so moving on to England, so what are we looking at? Are we looking, now I've got to bring up the list again. So we're looking at, I suppose, is it Curran or Wokes that gives way for Archer? I'm guessing it's Curran.
I reckon it might be Bowes. But then, isn't Anderson going to come back?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good point. So it could be both of them.
I would say Anderson, Broad, and Archer would be a bowling attack.
I think their best side is Archer, Broad, Anderson.
Yep.
Well, Broad, interesting you say that, because Jimmy Anderson just came out overnight saying that he still feels that the strongest English bowling attack is one that includes Stuart Broad and himself in it.
Yeah.
And Archer is a 90 mile an hour. You don't need, that was the error Stokes made by going for Wood and Archer. He Archer gives you pace and he gives you fire like you wouldn't believe. So there's no need for another spray gun. He just holds gas and nothing else.
Yeah.
So you basically you're down the other end. You're jumping and bouncing around because Archer's bowling at you. You're going to get, even if Archer doesn't pick up the wickets, because you're not scoring off him, that means that you're trying to score off the other end, and that gives the ball, whether it's Anderson, Broad, or whoever, even more opportunity to pick up wickets because they're looking to score off you.
I don't think looking to score off you, but I wouldn't say looking to score off you. It's a very different style. Like Archer, with his height, you could pretty much play a good length ball. I've never faced a guy of his caliber, but I'm guessing with his height, you could play most balls from the crease or from the back foot.
Yeah, right?
Because of the pace and the balance he generates. Then the following over, you've got Broad and Anderson that are trying to draw you forward. So you're going from your weight going back, sitting back to weight having to push forward. Then the following over, you're from forward to back. So you're being pushed around just with their style of operations. But Sam Curran and Vokes and Anderson just all pitch it up. You know, majority is pitch up, get wicked kind of style. So it's much the sameness.
One thing, I think it was Atherton. No, it wasn't Atherton. I've forgotten who it was. Basically saying that he'd like to see all their new fast bowlers, basically Mark Wood, Ollie Pope, and Jofra Archer playing in preparation for the next year's Ashes series.
That's an interesting pick from you, Ashwin. Ollie Pope does well for 5'4" as a batsman.
There's too many Ollies in the team. My bad.
I mean, they've already got 1 5'4" guy bowling seamless left arm, Sam Curran.
Okay, I'll leave it at Ollie. So I'll say Mark, Ollie, and Jofra.
No, they've also got that the bloke with the South Asian descent. I think that he's rated really highly.
Who's that?
I don't know his name. I think it's a Muslim name. He's a pan, a person of Ian South Asian descent.
Is he in the squad?
He was in the test squad in South Africa, I think. Or he came to New Zealand on their tour here. But he's rated really highly.
We'll find out. Unfortunately, we'll find out more overnight in terms of the they usually pick a 13 that they're going to pick the 11 from. So we'll hear overnight what's tomorrow morning larger squads they're going to pick the 11 from, and we'll see what happens. The weather than Manchester is not looking exactly great for the test match starting tomorrow. So looking tomorrow, they might actually finally get a test match away on time, possibly. There is a slight chance of rain, but Saturday, it might be another Saturday washout. And then the other days have still got some level of precipitation forecast within the test. So it could be another interesting time in terms of weather for the third test as well. So hopefully we don't have we get enough play to get a result, so we can get somebody walking away with the Wisden Trophy.
Good old English weather, right? In the summer.
Good old English weather. Mm. Well, so moving along, unless you guys want to add anything else about the third test or anything you saw in the second test, we'll move on to the 3TC.
Yeah, go on.
Yep, okay, mate.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, the 3TC, here we go. I'm just going to bring it up on screen again. So just a summary of those. The 3TC. 3TC stands for three team crickets. Yes, three teams playing one game of cricket. The match is played with eight players, the three teams having eight players each, and there are 36 overs played into two halves. So they do actually have a half time. They'll bowl 18 overs, they'll have a half time break, and then they'll bowl another 18 overs. Each team gets to face 12 overs per, so that's 12 overs per team. Now that 12 overs is not from one team that you face. You face six from one team and you face another six from another team. So you actually have two innings effectively there. They bat and bowl to one opponent in each six half hours. So just what I've sort of said. And then the seventh wicket. Once the seventh wicket is gone down, the not out batsman can carry on batting alone, but he has to take twos to get back to his home, to get back to his crease. Max overs three per bowler. Now, the three per bowlers, as mentioned, you've got two innings of bowling that you do, two lots of six overs. So you can bowl two in one set of six, and then you've got one in left for the other set of six to the other team. Or you could bowl three all in one over, one innings, I should say. So that's obviously a tactics scenario there in terms of how you will bowl your bowlers through. And then the winner is, of naturally, as per any normal game of cricket, the team that gets the most run gets the gold, the second most highest team gets the silver, and third gets bronze. So that's how, very quick summary of how 3TC cricket is played. Now, if two teams are drawn on the same amount of runs at the end of their 12 overs, at the end of the match, there is a super over that is played. So you can actually have a super over. We love super overs, don't we? And and yes. Also, you can actually have reduced overs as well if there is rain interruptions. So in a nutshell, the basics of it, that's 3TC cricket. The game was, there was a match of 3TC. The first one played in South Africa just over the weekend. As I mentioned in the news, I'll just go back to the three teams' names. It was the Eagles, the Kingfishers, and the Kites. And basically, I watched the first half. As I mentioned, they bowl 18 overs, have a break in it. I watched the first half, and this is probably going to sound a bit harsh, and Taryn will pull me up on it because I know he does that sort of thing. This is like... wrong teams playing, wrong country. They're not exactly the most innovative batters out of South Africa, and they didn't take it. They played traditional cricket shots that went straight to the fielders. There was no ramps. There's no scoops. There wasn't a lot of anything, and it was actually watching it. It was okay. It was okay viewing. I won't say it was bad. It wasn't poor, but you were expecting to see massive scores, but that didn't eventuate. In fact, off six overs, they were getting scores of 50, 55. So the one innings that was of note was AB de Villiers, and they ended up scoring something like 80 off a bundle of six overs, which basically won them the game. So, yeah, it was an interesting game. I think there's a lot of opportunity to be innovative in the way that you bat in particular. But unfortunately, we didn't really see that. But, yeah, boys, what do you think? I mean, I'm not sure, even if you didn't see the 3TC, what are your thoughts on this format of the game?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. I watched a little bit of it, but, not for me, to be fair.
Yep.
I think there's too much.
Much.
Like you said, there's not enough razzmatazz, but there was too much having to think about it and who scored what and how much do you need to get to beat one opposition versus the other, that type of thing. It's complicating a simple game in a way.
Yeah, I'd take it I'd strip it a level back and ask them. I would ask, I'd question what the purpose of this competition is. It's a bit like the 100, right? Like, what are we trying to achieve out of it? Are we trying to simplify the game? Are we trying to make the game more attractive and appealing? Or I don't know. It's almost as if, let's come up with something new because everybody else seems to be doing something new and doing it really well. Come up with their own little way of doing it. But yeah, I'm not sold on it. It'll take a bit more for me. And it doesn't help that there's no crowds there, right? And so you don't really, there's no real, you can't get the live feeling of
no atmosphere
really well, or if it's just it looks painful.
Yep. So I'm sort of thinking from my mind, it was, I don't know if it's an international format, but I can see some benefits around there at school schoolboy or school, you know, school level cricket. I should say school gold, level. Instead of school. What's that, sorry?
The awarding of gold, silver, bronze, that's great. Right, so it's like you get a participation certificate, everybody goes home a winner.
Yep. And the fact is that the continuity of involvement in the game, because it's six overs, then you change over, you're doing something. And so, you know, with smaller numbers, you don't have to have the you know, get to the 11 cricketers as well. And then, you know, you only got three teams sort of thing. So I can see some value in that at the junior grades. But then with us having something like T20, I can't see the value in something like this. I think I was excited to see a bit of cricket because we haven't. It's like at the moment we're excited to see any live sport really, and so it was fun to sort of sit down and watch a bit of cricket. But I don't know if I'd be able to sit there and watch a lot of it.
I mean, like I think there's. I get some of the thinking behind it, but there's probably simpler and better ways to do it. I mean. You know, if somebody copies this idea that I'm going to put out there, then I hope Paul goes in there and says, hey, it's actually our idea, so you're going to have to pay us royalties. But I think you could easily have a competition like this, like a cricket game, two-team competition, 11 aside. However, you have a batting 11 and a bowling 11 like baseball.
Right.
And you have specialist fielders. So you could have guys studded like Andre Russell, whose knee's going to hold up, but he's a fantastic six hitter. Chris Gayle, you name it, right? You could, a team can be stacked with these players, and then the bowlers, because we know they can't field and they're a bit of a liability for most teams to carry. So, well, actually, they're the sluggers, and then when the bowling. You have your Sunil Narayan and Malingas and all of those. They just bowl and they come off.
Yep.
Or they stay on for that period. And then you have your amazing fielders, the guys who can do some, I don't know, like cartwheels and stuff. Those kind of fielders. So you've
specialist
got
fielders.
Different division, like it, then a bit like baseball, you're starting to specialize in areas. And that could probably make better viewing, like serious cricket hitting, serious bowling, like it's showing off of different skill sets.
Yep, at the highest level sort of thing. Yeah, so adding to that format, I mean, like, if you did something like that, I mean, Simon's mentioning increasing it from three teams to four teams. Does it make much of a difference? Or basically, it's really just about getting the specialised teams on, isn't it?
But you'd think, yeah, specialised teams, I think, would simplify the game as well. And if you, let's say from an ICC perspective, you want to take the game to the States, it'll resemble a bit more of baseball.
Yep.
To make it attractive for them. This one just complicates it, makes it even more scientific. Science adds more science to a game, which is already very complicated.
Yeah, I mean, like one thing for my mind, I mean, like you were watching the game, you're sort of trying to get your head around it a bit, as Rohit was alluding to. Yeah, you know, the commentators were continuously explaining what's going on, sort of thing, and it's just like, as I said, complicating something that doesn't need to be so complex. And then they threw to an extended long break, and it's just like it just broke the whole momentum of it for me. And it's like, oh, well, I'm off the bed now. So
yeah, that's when I went to bed.
Yeah.
If you had to explain something, you know it's not a good product, eh?
You What's want it? Say that again, sorry?
You have to explain something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like, it's like an Apple phone. Why do people like it? It's simple. It's the same no matter what phone you get. It's the same software.
Hey, just out of left field and out of interest.
Yes.
How do they decide who batted first and who bowled first and who stood in the sidelines?
They did a draw.
They had a ball draw.
Yep.
A ball draw.
So the ball draw, they had three balls in front, and it's just like you picked the ball had a number on it. That number equated to an option. So one team walked up, picked the ball, and it had number one on it. Okay, number one is your bowling first. Okay. So next person picks up. You picked up number three. Oh, you're in the dugout because they call it the dugout. And then it's like, oh yeah. So that means that you last team's got number two. You're batting.
Right.
Yeah. I enjoyed the bat flip more than this.
Those were valleys.
Yeah, they did that in the big base, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. They did the bat flip and the big bash.
You know, that's cool. That's good stuff. This kind of thing, I reckon, they should bring in double plays.
Double plays, yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you on that one.
Are we trying to turn the game into American baseball or something?
No, I was actually watching an old school game, the old WSC game, and it's just like they ran the batsman out. He had sacrificed himself. He wanted to get the hitter back down to the striking end, so he sacrificed himself. So they got him out that end. But I reckon they could have got the batsman out as well easily.
Yeah, I mean,
so a double play should be an option.
I thought about another thing, and man, like, I've got ideas. let's say you're playing a 2020 game, right? A bit like, you know, they've tried everything. They've tried power plays and this and that, right? You should be allowed to call an over. Well, first they should allow for timeouts. I know it lengthens the game, but it allows for you to put advertising in there anyway, so it's a win-win. Imagine if they allowed you to say, let's say we're playing a 20-over game, and you hand-pick an over and go, in the middle of the game, you can say, you have to give a 2-over notice, and you go, in the 16th over, you can say, right, I call power play over 19. Any runs you score in that over, when you call it, is worth double.
It's like a joker. Throw the joker in there.
Yeah. So you're chasing a score, so you're never out of the game, right? We're chasing a score of 40 off 2 overs. Yep. And you've held your power play over, you can throw it in there, try and catch 15 and make it 30 with 10 to win off the last.
Yep. Yep. Would you play it in the first six, like IPL? You play it in the first six. Yeah, because I mean then
did it out by calling it up front.
Yep.
Yeah.
Speaking of IPL, Simon asking, is there a chance of the Big Bash and the IPL being played at the same time? I would say a big no to that. No, I don't think there's any chance, because Big Bash is basically over our summer period from sort of November through to February, and IPL is generally around the sort of April timeframe. Taryn, would that be right?
Yeah. Well, I think Simon's referring to this one this year, because the IPL window for 2020 is now October, right? September, yep. October. I think that's what he's probably talking about.
Yeah, no, he is actually. He's clarified. He's meaning for this year.
Yeah, and if the ECB don't get their act together and people's paperwork doesn't move around, it'll easily get pushed further and further into November and December, which might coincide with Big Bash. But I think the two parties have good relationships, and they'll probably make sure it doesn't get in the way of it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that my understanding with the IPL is that they're just waiting for the for the Indian government now to approve it, and then basically
Emirates government has to approve it too.
Emirates. Oh, right. Okay. Yep.
And
okay.
Then they have to approach all the other bodies and get them to be released. And if you've got, I don't know, like let's say South Africa is got a bit of COVID. Would Emirates allow for the South Africans to turn up and the Indians to turn up?
I think when we look at the England, West Indies and Pakistan and the way that they've managed the quarantining process, quarantining before you leave and then quarantining once you get there as well, I think there's some good examples of how it can be done and achieved. So as long, you know, it's good that there's been some precedents, because that's a great word for these times, precedent, has been set to be able to follow. So you'd hope that that could be followed, and again, those players that need to come from around can get there. The issue that could be, and this is something that could affect the Women's World Cup and why that might need to be shifted, is that if a player has to transit through another country and doesn't have a direct flight to get to UAE, that would be the issue. That could be an issue.
Mm. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Oh, Emirates flies most places, though, right?
Emirates do fly most places. Yeah. I think even at the moment. Yeah, I think they're flying to Auckland at the moment. So, So yeah, I think, I mean, like most of the I suppose the Caribbean, if there's some players in the Caribbean, I'm not sure whether there's any issues there, but yeah, I mean, like, but your Pakistan's and your India, you're going to get Emirates flights from there, aren't you, to Dubai?
They could probably drive there, I think.
Yep.
From India and Pakistan, they can just drive there.
To drive.
Actually, they don't get lost like those two ladies got lost in the road.
You're bringing it back to that.
He's been missing for a couple of weeks, come on, you know. <He's in there.
laughs> Drive, that's a hell of a drive.
to my mind, though, I'm pretty confident. It just seems like every, you know, BCCI generally get to make things work, don't they?
They get what they want, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'll make things work.
Yeah. If you want, the cash doesn't fix.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's worth so much money to them that they can throw a bit of money around to make it happen.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay, I don't know.
You can tell them when you catch up with them.
He thinks it's big in coming from Mexico to America, I think.
Yeah. Excuse me. Look, we've sort of gone the hour, but I suppose we've got enough time because we always run over anyway. Just so we go over it, I mean, as I mentioned in the news, T20 World Cup has been shifted. I'm just going to bring up – oh, there we go. So T20 has been shifted, postponed, I should say, not shifted, but postponed to 2021. Now, there was going to be a T20 World Cup in India in 2021, and that's so that date, not that tournament, that date has been shifted to 2022. So we'll have a T20 World Cup in 2021 and a T20 World Cup in 2022. Now, you would think that Australia would be 2021, India 2022. No, that's not the case. They need to go through the finances and the financial implications and the viability of each tournament in those locations at those in those years before they make a decision. So it is quite feasible that India could be now 2021 and Australia 2022. Those two countries will actually host those two World Cups. It's just the order that is to be decided that will be hosted. And now the other factor into that is that the 2023 50 over World Cup, ODI World Cup, is in India in 2023. And that's the scenario that has to be weighed around, I believe, in terms of India want to, I think, move to the T20 World Cup in 2021 in India, and therefore Australia 2022. I hope that made sense and did that come through. So, basically it looks like, 2021, 2022 T20 World Cups, and then 2023 is the 50 over World Cup where New Zealand will finally take it. And then the women's one, as I just alluded to, so at the moment, the Women's World Cup, which is planned for February in New Zealand 2021, is still being planned as it's going ahead in February 2021. The issue that they're having is the logistics of some countries where they will have to transit to get to New Zealand. So they can't do their quarantining as what Pakistan and West Indies did, quarantine 2 weeks before they leave and then quarantine 2 weeks once they land in New Zealand. So that's the issue that they've got. I think if they come up with a solution to that, there's no reason why the Women's World Cup can't go ahead in February of 2021. Boys, your thoughts on all that? Did you get it?
Totally lost you.
You just had lots of years being thrown around.
I definitely think next year we'll go to India.
Yep.
And then it'll go to Australia the following
Australia.
Year. Yep. Yeah. So here's my question, right?
What's your question?
Right. So put it up. Actually, you should tweet this out from Swinging from the Hip to ICC and ask a question. So
yep.
If the competition next year goes to India,
yep,
technically it's a new competition,
right?
This tournament has, I think, like 12 established teams and 4 teams that qualified through. They qualified to Australia. So does that mean for India, a new set of qualifiers need to take place, like PNG qualified for Australia for the first time?
Yep.
So
yep.
Is it the same set of teams going across, or are you looking at a 4-round of qualifiers, etc.? Because technically, not that PNG would argue, but they might say, well, hang on, we deserve to be there. And if you look at it from their perspective, they might have an aging side that may be beyond their best in 2022. And 2021 is where they need to build to.
Yep. So what no, absolutely good point. I mean, that's a very valid point, because the 2023 50 over World Cup was actually initially for earlier in the year, March, I believe, off the top of my head. It has now been shifted to October, November of 2023. And the reason is because qualifying matches at the moment aren't taking place, and they won't be able to be completed before the earlier window of 2023. So therefore, they've shifted it to allow for the qualifying matches to actually be completed. So that's a valid point. And yeah, remind me, send me the wording, remind me, and I'll put that on our page and add it to ICC.
Yeah, go on. I'll do it. Yeah, that's one. But the other thing I thought of was, obviously, with the size Women's World Cup in New Zealand, there's been a lot of advertising around roles and jobs, right? A lot of jobs have been advertised. A lot of people must have picked up those positions.
Right.
Having given up their own positions, they would have taken up a year or two's contract, right?
Yes. As you do with World Cups coming around, yeah.
When that gets burned, a whole bunch of people in this economic climate have given up their jobs to go into a program that has been ghosted. It's not going to exist. It's not going to happen. So what happens to their jobs?
Yep.
You know, somebody who's got a pretty stable job going, oh, no, cricket is my passion. Here's my opportunity. I'm going to take
it. Here's my resignation letter.
Here's my resignation because I've now picked up a really cool contract gig, and here's where I'm going. Bang, there's no more tournament. Oh, oops, I've just handed it in. Ashwin, well done on that burp and muting yourself.
Thanks, man. I'm having a bit of practice at it during the show.
Glad you found the mute button after 14 episodes.
I'm old. Don't hassle old people, okay? You know, that's you're being ageist. Being ageist.
I was curious about those people because, you know, I subscribe to Seek for whatever reason. All these jobs come up. Oh, that's cool. Oh, wow, it's a contract only. Some poor guy who's reliant on that might get news in a few weeks' time going, yeah, sorry, mate, it's been deferred.
Yep, absolutely. But in saying that, obviously, it'll depend on when it's deferred too, right? If it's deferred to the end of 2021, they might be able to work with that. But if it's a year, then that's a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah. So, interesting things to consider.
That's it. Well, another thing we can ask the ICC on that one.
Reach out.
Oh, they might take a wage subsidy.
Hey, look, I suppose that's we better wrap it up there. And thanks, guys, for coming on the show tonight. And thanks for everybody that have been in the chats rooms and the posting the comments. And really appreciate those comments coming through. So keep them coming through in the shows in the future. And we like getting them in, and so that we can have discussion points coming out of those chat rooms. Once again, thank you to everybody that's tuned in and that will be listening to this on podcast, because you've got many, many ways to download your podcast and listen to this show at your leisure, on your way to your commute, on the way to work, whenever. Remember, there's many shows on New Zealand Sports Radio. Monday nights, we've got the Driving Mall show that discusses all the issues around rugby. We've got Wednesday night, we've got the Standoff, which talks about league and what's happening there. We've got, obviously, the greatest show on New Zealand Sport Radio. I'm a bit biased there, but Swinging from the Hip on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. We've got the preview show for Super Rugby and AU and Aotearoa happening on Friday nights. And then we've got the review show on Sunday night. for everything that went down over the weekend with Super Rugby. But make sure you join us again here at 8 p.m. on Swinging from the Hip, right here on New Zealand Sport Radio, and we'll see you again next Thursday. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.